Ray Troll is joining me in the studio this morning. Ray Troll is, I don't know, do you call yourself an artist, Ray Troll, or is there something
I'm bigger? More of an experienced man. The Ray Troll experience. No, I do call myself, I am an artist, yeah. I used to kind of flinch or, you know, apologize when I said that, you know artist, but I am an artist, yeah.
Do you have a day job?
My day job is doing art, and I quit my other jobs. I don't know. I'm virtually unemployable about 25 years ago. I'm here because of the new book,
right?
Something Fishy This Way Comes. And, this is book number 8. The other books have usually been collaborations.
Right.
I did do one solo book before, and that was the Shark Alphabet book, Sharkabet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was out about 2000. But this is the first time. It's just a kind of a compilation of just the kind of funny stuff. And so it's like 120-some pages of nothing but the funny stuff. And there's an essay, albeit a short essay, but a witty essay by a Sitka guy that I think you know as well.
I'll read the first lines of it. This is a foreword to Something Fishy This Way Comes. The foreword is by John Straley.
John.
The book, of course, is by Ray Troll. If there were such a thing, Ray Troll would be the artist laureate of hallucinatory fish images.
That's a great opening line, is it not?
And it goes just downhill from there.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, thanks, John. He did a great job, and I've known John for eons now. But and he and I have collaborated on a few things over the years. But I did one of his book covers, actually. You know, the Big Both Ways.
Mm-hmm.
Worked in that.
Right.
So, anyways, it's always great to get back to Sitka and check out the rest of Southeast and what everybody's doing.
Is this book, do you consider it a retrospective? I mean, are you at the point in your career where you're doing that kind of looking back, or is this something that's kicking us forward still?
You know, it is sort of like rock and roll, I guess. In rock and roll, they say when you do the greatest hits, that's it. You're washed up, you know. And so, I'm still doing it. It is kind of a retrospective, and hopefully it's retrospective number one. You know, I am getting to a ripe older age now, but I'm still cranking out, still doing these things. But like I said, the model was, I've often been, many people say, it's sort of like Gary Larson. And this is the first time I've done a Larson-esque book in that, like I said, there are no essays. It's not some great literary thing. It's just just solid images. And not to say there aren't a lot of, substance behind the images, But, albeit some of them are just kind of silly jokes and really bad puns, the lowest form of humor. But others, are kind of, thoughtful. At least I'd like to think so.
I think there's a lot of thought in here. I wonder if you thought when you started your career that you would become Alaska's foremost textile artist.
Did you? The sartorial dude.
Number one. Yeah. Did you imagine that t-shirts would be your primary medium as you set out on your career?
No, it was, as I said, it was accidental. I'm the accidental, t-shirt guy, I guess, in a way. It is a culmination of what I do in my life, and that I did go to school for printmaking. I learned how to make prints.
Like woodcuts?
Yeah, like woodcuts and that sort of thing. Yeah, so my undergraduate degree is in printmaking. I got a Master of Fine Arts degree also in printmaking and drawing. And so, but I came to Alaska in 83 with a printmaking degree in my back pocket. And I came up here actually because, I was just going to spend a summer up here with my sister. And I came up here to help her sell fish. So I was a fishmonger with a printmaking degree. So it's a really pretty logical thing. I knew how to pull a squeegee. And in fact, I'd worked in a t-shirt kind of sweatshop down in Seattle for after I got out of college, and had my Master of Fine Arts degree, and I was printing all these KISW rock t-shirts in this sweatshop in Seattle. I was like, God, it was a tough job. So I know the work that it takes to do these things. But then I moved to Alaska and I had that kind of background. So it was pretty natural for me to, I spent 1 year in Alaska, moved here in 83, but in 84 I started taking that printmaking knowledge and actually got the squeegee out, and I printed the shirts myself.
Mm-hmm.
One by one, one fish at a time, you know, one stroke, let it air dry these things. And I did this whole series of shirts and air dried them, had them up in my studio, which is in a cannery, and sold them at this short-lived Sea Fest that we used to have over in Ketchikan. The festival never really took off, but the T-shirts did, and they were like this smash hit at this festival, and I sold a whole bunch, like in a matter of a couple days, and was like, whoa.
All right.
I'm onto something here.
The light bulb went on.
The light bulb went on, you know, and that stuff that I didn't learn in art school, you know, the things like retail. And then the magical thing that happened after that, I had these leftover shirts. And the other magical thing I didn't learn in high school or college was, wholesale. So I sold the shirts and then I had these leftovers and went, oh, could take these to the local store and sell them for, you know, not make as much money, but you make
right.
a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the wholesale thing where, you know, it's the store buys it and duh, you know, it was kind of it. So I was happily printing these shirts. But then after a while, I realized as they started to really take off, if I wanted to keep making the art, which is really what I enjoyed doing, was making, you know, the initial image. And I got a great deal of respect for those squeegee pullers out there who are making the stuff because it's hard work. So anyways, eventually that is a company now down in Tacoma that does that for me. So
okay. And I guess and the empire started with
the
that?
The empire strikes best. Yeah. Something like that. So yeah, it started taking off and we got them in mostly, to this day, it's still primarily Alaska. But there was a point actually when they sort of exploded in the early 90s. And I was with a very ambitious t-shirt company, and they got them in every state in the union and in every Canadian province there for a while. And now the empire is kind of, you know, chugging along, but the empire is basically Alaska and the Northwest. So, and down the West Coast. So it's really more of a West Coast kind of Salmonic thing.
All right. Now I noticed, and I'm sure a lot of people listening did, that you slipped in an idea there just a moment ago, The Empire Strikes Bass.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Is that
Salmonic? Yeah.
Yeah. Is that how you do it? Are you like laying awake at night and, you know, listening to...
It's terrible. It's an affliction. Yeah, there it is. You know, the turn of phrase and you hear something and, oh, it's an...
Do you have a notepad by your bed?
I do. Yep. I usually have one by the bed. I have one out in the studio. I usually have one in the briefcase that I carry around with me. So if something, you know, occurs to me or you just stumble across it, I'm really not all that quick with the turn of phrase, but when I hear them, I'll jot them down. And most of them over the years have been mine, but I got to say that, you know, not all of them are. You know, there are people that bounce ideas off me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you were just glancing through the book there, and I remember one, Mr. White Keys up in Anchorage.
Oh, yeah?
He's a buddy of mine.
Sure.
So. You get that phone call from White Keys. He has that great voice. Hey, Ray, I got an idea for you. This one is really good. You're going to love it. And all right, here it goes like this. It's Mona Lisa, see? But it's the Da Vinci Cod.
All right.
Hey, that's pretty good, Mr. White Keys. I like that. Yeah, that works. But, you know, then so that one did do very well as the Da Vinci Code, Da Vinci Cod, see? And other times, some people might email me a few ideas. But, like I said, most of them I'm cooking up on my own. And probably if there's one image that I, you know, as I go through this life, the book ends with it there, kind of builds up to it. If there's one image, it'll be like carved on my tombstone. It'll probably be Spawn Till You Die. So there I did that one in 87. And
mm-hmm.
Year after year, just, you know, it's just right up there, and it's true. There's been entire generations raised on this stuff now, so it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I can see how that image might resonate with all sorts of sectors of the fish-loving public.
That, and it's also interesting to see how it's interpreted, too. So you can, that's mm-hmm. the fun of art, you know? You throw the stuff out there and see what happens.
You ever come up with an idea and just you couldn't get the image to translate? To complement the verbal thought you had in your head?
Well, sometimes there's images that maybe even I can't draw. The images in my head. Well, there's one. There's Curiosity Killed the Cat. That's Curiosity Killed the cat. And there I'm stretching the pun a little bit. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch. But I had a great deal of fun drawing that with just this whole big pile of curio stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Schlockola. And it's burying this little kitty, you know. And there's Moose Nugget Swizzle Sticks in there. And there's, you know, just all that horrible stuff that
the horrible
we see the horrible stuff
the horrible totems that don't come from Southeast Alaska natives,
yeah, or, you know,
that come from Taiwan
but,
or something.
But there's something also just wonderful about that stuff too, you know.
Yeah.
I'm drawn to it and repelled by it.
Is the kitty gonna wake up in this picture?
I don't know.
Okay.
Kitty's actually still alive and she's like 18 years old and she did
good.
That's our household cat.
Ray, I guess you know you've succeeded when you've spawned a whole lot of bad imitators. Right?
Yeah, I could.
Can you go anywhere these days where you don't see somebody trying to do a T-shirt that kind of looks like a Ray Troll?
Well, I don't know. You know, it used to really, it kind of really bothered me at first when I, you know, I'd gotten onto something and, you know, I see people doing stuff in the vein of, and now it is like, yeah, it's okay. And I've kind of seen them come and go too over the years, and yeah, you just, you know, whatever. It's okay. It's cool. It's kind of fun to see that, you know, you've spawned kind of a... We keep using this word now.
Spawn, yeah. We can't avoid
spawn, can't avoid, avoid. There it is. You know, spawned a look.
And some of these, are they actually woodcuts? This hook,
yeah, that one actually is. There's my printmaking degree in full form there.
Okay.
That is... I do believe in truth to materials, you know. I mean, if you want it to look like a linoleum block print or a wood engraving, by God, sit down and do it as one. And that's, you know, hook, line, and thinker. You get a good eye there. That's that is a linoleum block print.
That's the woodcut. And I know the last time you and I talked in this setting, you were here working on the mural that's on the Marine Services.
Yep, did that with Will Burkhart and Roberto and Memo.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about could an idea that is that works well on a bag of coffee or on a cover of a book or on a T-shirt, you know, can you translate that same sort of hallucinatory thing to a mural? And going back and looking at that mural nowadays, do you feel a sense of, you know, accomplishment with it? Do you think the idea got conveyed well up there?
Yeah, I love. Actually, I'm gonna go down. I've not visited it yet on this journey. I'm gonna go actually after we finish this. Gotta go check it out. I understand it's weathering well,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, usually, you know, you gotta kind of design something. You know, what works on a mural doesn't necessarily work in a T-shirt and vice versa. You know, you've got to kind of adapt it for the big visual hit.
Right.
Now, you did want to ask me about ratfish for some reason.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes, I did want to ask you about a ratfish. You know, I, like everybody else who's lived here any length of time, you know, I'm totally, you know, committed salmon fisherman and halibut. I just, I go to great lengths
to get the good fish.
Yeah,
yes.
To get the fish. And, you know, and I've pulled up, you know, I used to think a skate was about the weirdest thing I could catch. I used to, for a while, a box crab was the weirdest thing
pretty bizarre,
was caught.
Yes.
But the capper for me was a ratfish. When the ratfish came up, that's when I began to hear the kind of the Twilight Zone music in my head going, I didn't know stuff like this lived.
Well, you know, that happened to me when I caught my first one about 25 years ago, and that was my same reaction, like, whoa, this is really different.
Mm-hmm.
So as an artist, I was like, this is cool looking. I want to know more about this. It's kind of a horrible looking, stitched together looking fish.
Yeah.
And actually, your gut instinct, in a way, is really right on, because it's truly from another world. And when I say another world, of course, it's from the deep, but... it's really a survivor from deep time. It's from way, way back. There really are very few animals in the ocean that are from that era unchanged. And that's actually goes almost all the way back to the Devonian. Your modern day sharks, all your rockfish, your salmon, all that. And when you start hanging out with scientists, I start putting all this together. But all of those things, that like the salmon, the rockfish, those are all fairly recent. They're like post-dinosaurs, after the dinosaurs. This is something from before the dinosaurs. And there are, you know, you've got your hagfish out there and your lampreys and your ratfish and your coelacanths. those are the things that are truly ancient. And so this is an ancient beast, number one. But the that's a cool thing about them. But the scary thing about ratfish is that they've been around for so long, almost 300 million years. But, you know, their numbers are on the rise again. And in Puget Sound now, and it's kind of a cautionary tale, they are 75% of the biomass. When they've been doing trawl surveys down there in Puget Sound, they come up sometimes 90% ratfish.
Hmm.
So something is terribly askew down there, and they're usually deep water fish, but they're at the surface now. You can go down to the Seattle Aquarium and just look out over, you know, and down there in the waterfront, there's ratfish at the surface.
Really?
And we're beginning to see their numbers have been quadrupling down there within the last decade, quadrupling. Nothing's eaten them.
Hmm.
They're kind of the ultimate survivors. And I'm, you know, it's kind of afraid to say that I think we might begin to see their numbers increasing here. And so here in Southeast.
So they wound up on some evolutionary sidetrack and have been around a long time. And
there's just not much of a fillet on the beast.
Yeah.
And there's just basically a big dorsal fin spine that nobody wants. Basically, other animals don't eat them. You know, sea lions will leave them alone. Seals will leave them alone because they're not worth the hassle.
Yeah.
You know, and that's their secret.
My first reaction upon seeing this was to send it back.
Yes, send it back. Get thee away from me, ratfish.
As quickly as it came. So, Ray, is the ratfish scarier than the candiru?
There is nothing as scary as the candiru, my friend. Yes, that's the scariest of scary. It is a little tiny catfish from the Amazon, and I've been down to the Amazon four times, and it's a little fish. It's about 4 inches long, and actually I wrote a song. I recorded it with the Ratfish Wranglers. It's all about the terrors of what the candiru can do, and if that's not a song cue, I don't know what it is. 1, 2, 3, 4.
What the candiru can do.
But you'll learn all about it, actually. Go to YouTube, punch in candiru song, and you'll see it there, the little bouncing candiru, and it tells you all about it in the song.
Candiru, C-A-N-D-I-R-U. And this is the little fish in the Amazon that swims into places no fish should swim into on our bodies.
It's ungodly, yes.
Yeah.
It's the terrible things it does.
All right. And
it's as much as we need to say, really.
And have you got more music that we should be aware of? Have you got a whole set of trove of CDs out there?
Well, I have 2 CDs done now, and actually we're working on CD number 3. Yeah, so yeah, and I'm hoping to bring the whole band over, the Ratfish Wranglers, over here sometime.
From Ketchikan, and are you a dance band? Are you balladeers? Are you what are you exactly?
We've carved out our own niche. That's a very comfortable niche, just like the Ratfish has carved out its niche. I would describe us more as a PowerPoint kind of rock and roll. So I have my little PowerPoints, and you know, we have little fish costumes. It's you learn things. We sing about the candiru. We sing about ratfish. We sing Spondidae is a song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So actually, many of these images that are in there, Spondidae is a song. So that actually, you could Ain't No Nookie Like Chinookie. That's like a barroom song.
That's
yeah?
a perfect
so,
song. And
country western.
When
you
say PowerPoint, do you literally have?
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. No, I've got the PowerPoints for all. Every song's got a PowerPoint. We have one about lump suckers of love. In fact, I'll show you my tattoos here. Yeah, I got a lump sucker on my arm right there. It is.
All right.
Got lump suckers of love. These lump suckers. It's a song, but are these wonderful little fish that are shaped like golf balls. They have a little sucker on them, and they're just so cool. So we sang songs about lump suckers and
my hat's off
that kind of
thing to the tattoo artist who put that on your arm right there, right in the middle of the big heart.
That's right. That's the lump sucker of love. Yeah,
probably something he hasn't done much of. And
Angel is my tattooist.
Okay. And yeah. Do you play an instrument as well?
I do. I hack away at a guitar, if you can call it playing it. But I have fun doing it. What can I say? And hopefully, people that listen to it kind of get infected with that fun.
Where else are you headed on this trip?
Well, I've been in Monterey, Denver, and then been down to Port Townsend, Seattle, Bellingham, and now I'm headed to Juneau next, and then Wasilla. I'm going to be the Thrilla in Wasilla. I'm in Wasilla next Tuesday, and then Anchorage, and then home, back to Ketchikan.
Okay, and is the book doing well?
Book has been doing very well. It's like the one I should have done a while ago. You know, so yeah, and it's priced perfectly, too. It's less than $20, and it's by golly, it's out just before Christmas. So yep. Maybe the timing, maybe it's all lining up right.
We'll see. Something like 40 days to go till Christmas. It's called Something Fishy This Way Comes. It's the art of Ray Troll. It's published by Sasquatch Books. You can probably check it out online at sasquatchbooks.com. Ray Troll, thanks a lot for coming in to Sitka.
Thanks for having me, man. Love Sitka.